From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week via Skype, Emily Tamkin, U.S. Editor for the New Statesman, Josh Glancy, Washington Bureau Chief for the Sunday Times, and our moderator is Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday.
Welcome, everyone. Usually we analyze and discuss various issues all around the world on this program, but this week, just about everywhere on this earth, people are wondering, who will be president of the United States as of January? Will there be a change? Did Donald Trump lose the election this past Tuesday? Let's turn to our panelists, who, like all journalists here in Washington, D.C., are operating on limited sleep. It's not absolutely certain that Joe Biden, the former vice president, the Democrat, has been elected president. Not absolutely certain whether President Trump won or lost. There was word of lawsuits that are already being filed. Emily Tamkin, from the moment that the polling places closed on Tuesday night, Mr. Trump was in a mood to fight. What did you see?
It wasn't just after the polling places closed. I mean, the president had been saying for weeks that he had doubts as to the legitimacy of the election. He said that mail-in voting was fraudulent, which is not true. Yeah, I mean, President Trump very early Wednesday morning got out and declared victory, although that was premature. On Wednesday, he declared victory in Pennsylvania and in Michigan, although he had not won those states, and indeed Michigan is projected for Joe Biden. Sort of parallel to this declaration of victory, yes, he's either threatening or going in with lawsuits across the country, either to stop the counting of votes or to say that ballots accepted after Election Day, you know, for example, in Pennsylvania, that were postmarked on or before Election Day but arrived after are not legitimate and get thrown out. So I think what we should expect is that even if in the next few days or even today there's a projection of a Biden victory, we should still expect President Trump to try to take the case to the Supreme Court, as he has said, to take a case to the Supreme Court, as he has said he wants to do, although it should be noted that Bush v. Gore in 2000, that was a specific case in Florida that then made its way up to the Supreme Court, right? You can't just say that I want this to be decided by the Supreme Court. So we should expect, in addition to, you know, hours and days of nail biting and results watching, we should expect more threats of and acts of litigation from the president.
You know, the weekend before Election Day, President Trump was out there in the key states considered battlegrounds with large outdoor rallies, not taking many protective measures against the coronavirus. And the crowds really turned out. One of the things that President Trump told them was the only way he could lose the election is if the other side, the Democrats, would be cheating. And so in a way, Josh Glancy, President Trump continued with that narrative. Even at the White House, hours after polls closed, that speech he gave to supporters at 2:30 a.m. Wednesday, our time, where he said the voting must stop. In effect, he was saying the vote counting must stop in some states. He was claiming some form of fraud, Josh.
Yeah, certainly the president has primed his supporters for this moment. But in a funny way, he also telegraphed it. And he also made it rather predictable. You know, I think we all knew he was going to make this speech. And so therefore, in a way, it almost felt quite performative. And I think the Democrats on the other side did a very effective message about also preparing people for this moment, preparing people for the fact that it might take a long time to count the ballots, that there was likely to be what they call a blue shift, so that it would look like Trump was ahead. But actually, once all the mail-in ballots were counted, the Democrats would take the lead because Democrat ballots, they do better in the mail-in voting. So I think the messaging on this has been quite effective. So although we are obviously in a very febrile moment as we record this, and we don't know how it's going to turn out, and there could yet be Supreme Court battles and street battles for that matter. But I think so far, for all the sound and fury, things have proceeded somewhat as expected and with relatively little serious discord and unrest. But that could obviously change. And the longer this goes on, the more fraught it becomes, really.
We did hear from the various states that the officials who are in charge of counting the votes were just doing their job. Yes, they had to cope with more votes than ever. And in a moment, we'll talk about the high voter turnout and what that means. But because of COVID-19, the coronavirus, a huge number of Americans decided to vote in advance using absentee ballots or mail-in ballots, literally mailing them in. And there was some concern as to whether the U.S. Postal Service was delivering them promptly, or a lot of people were delivering their ballots to local offices or official drop boxes. But still, there were more pieces of paper that had to be opened and then analyzed and counted. And it simply took time. The state officials were putting out the message, don't worry about it. And as for Joe Biden, the former vice president, his message, not just to his supporters, but he said to all Americans, was let all the votes be counted. Biden did say from early in the process on Wednesday that Biden believed he would be the winner. So, Emily, it seemed that Biden didn't want to sound boastful. He was handling an apparent victory with some modesty and again, advocating patience.
Yeah, I think if your message is you have to wait for every vote to be counted, you can't then declare victory prematurely. So I think that he was trying to say that we believe that we are on track to win, but you need to keep counting the votes. And I mean, first of all, in some of these places, state officials couldn't begin counting the votes until election day, which is why people were saying, well, if Biden wins Florida and Texas, then we can probably know night of. But if not, if it goes to the Rust Belt states, which indeed it did, you know, the Pennsylvania, your Michigan, your Wisconsin, the state legislature in Pennsylvania said, no, you can't start counting votes before election day. So then you necessarily are going to need to keep counting them after election day in an election, which exactly as you said, has unprecedented early voting and mail-in voting. And I would also say that continuing to count, that's not a partisan issue, right? We're seeing it now in, you know, you had Trump supporters in Michigan chanting, stop the vote, and in Arizona saying, keep counting. Well, every vote deserves to be counted, right? Democrats and Republicans and independents all cast their votes with the expectation that that vote will be counted.
Josh, when you see that the vote count was a slow process and that some Americans were patient with it, but in this day of fast-moving media and online social networking, if it takes a lot of time, that lends itself to all sorts of conspiracy theories. I don't just call it impatience. It's almost dangerous, but I suppose it's unavoidable.
Yes. Clearly, the longer it goes on, the more we can fill in the blanks and people who are inclined to believe conspiracy theories about the election. And there have been these theories going around online, and we saw them translate into real life. People turned up at a Detroit counting center to protest the count there. But what we haven't seen are these armed gangs. We haven't seen rioting. We haven't really seen clashes between people and the authorities in any significant way. So, yeah, it's a very, very fraught moment. And the longer it goes on, the worse it'll probably get. And we have to hope for a quick and clean denouement at some point. But at the moment, I would say the system is creaking, but not collapsing, which is a reassurance of sorts.
And we noticed another adjective from you, Josh, febrile, right? Everything at a high fever. Well, sure, but some people were watching calmly, even as there were states where, well, as of Thursday, for instance, about 2 days after the voting stopped, they were too close to call. North Carolina, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, Michigan and Wisconsin were very important states. They were won by Donald Trump 4 years ago. This time, Joe Biden was declared to be the winner in both Michigan and Wisconsin. And that was a key to Biden's hopes that he would indeed be the eventual winner. But bottom line, the fact that it's so close in these 51 separate elections, the 50 states and here in Washington, D.C., in almost every state except for Maine and Nebraska, it's winner take all. You could win the state by one vote and you would get all the electoral college votes from that state. So like 51 separate elections, very close. And that means that America is very divided, almost 50-50. Emily, what's your take on that?
I think regardless of who the outcome of this election is declared to be, millions of people, tens of millions of people are going to be disappointed and angry. And if indeed Joe Biden is declared to be the winner, there's been a lot of punditry that's like, well, Trump wasn't repudiated and Trumpism will continue. Yes, of course, because there are indeed tens of millions of people in the United States across the country who voted for Donald Trump to have a second term, who will maybe believe that this election was stolen from him because of what the president has said. and who will continue with Trump's politics and take that forward. That's not going away, even if Joe Biden is indeed in the White House. I think there are some people, particularly outside of the United States, maybe, who thought that nobody would vote for Trump a second time. But that's not the reality of the United States. There, you know, 60-something million people did indeed vote for Donald Trump.
Well, let's think about the two coasts that are considered to be liberal. Right on the West Coast, the states of California, which is huge, Oregon and Washington, they went for Joe Biden big, you know, almost 2-1 in California. And on the East Coast, in the Northeast, again, liberal states like New York and New Jersey and up into New England, states like Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, they're so big for Joe Biden and the Democrats. But in the middle of the country, all those states that are pro-Donald Trump, that are conservative states, Trump held on to the vast majority of states and voters that he had won 4 years ago. So, Josh, say something, if you would, about almost the expectation on the West Coast and the East Coast that Americans would reject Donald Trump. And it tells me that people who live on the coasts don't understand the middle of the country.
And vice versa. You know, it's important to remember that there's plenty of people in the middle who don't really understand the coast. Yes, I think a lot of liberals and Democrats, particularly looking at the polling in advance of the election, which favored Biden very heavily, were hoping that this would be a blowout. And one thing we do know for certain at this point is that it is not a blowout. Biden does seem to have won the popular vote very comfortably, but that's not how this election is decided. The fact that we're still counting and it's razor thin in Georgia, in Arizona, and seemingly in Pennsylvania, although there's a lot of vote left to count there, shows us that, yes, this was a very tight election, and Trump was able to turn out one of the high, you know, he turned out more voters than any, I think this is correct, than any president in history, more than Obama in 08. It's just Biden seems to have even more at the moment. So Donald Trump is a very popular politician, and people really listened to what he was saying, and it really resonated, and his hectic rally schedule in the last few weeks really whipped up a lot of support in the swing states. People turned out for him, and their concerns will have to be addressed. And that's primarily an issue for the Republican Party if Donald Trump loses. They need to find a way to address the concerns and ideas that he's promoted and find a candidate who can reflect that but isn't Donald Trump. That's if he loses. So, yeah, there's no great repudiation of Trump or Trumpism, but we'll see how it turns out.
As for the high turnout, indeed, as of Thursday, add up all the numbers from all the states, and Donald Trump had about 68.5 million votes. Indeed, more than anyone got in the past. 68.5 million, but Joe Biden had just over 72 million votes. But it's not the popular votes that decide things. What's going to happen with the new Congress in the new year when we come back?
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Emily Tamkin, U.S. Editor for the New Statesman. Josh Glancy, Washington Bureau Chief for the Sunday Times. And our moderator, Dan Raviv, columnist for Newsday.
How about the American Congress? Not much change is expected as the votes were being counted. Democrats before this election had 47 seats in the Senate, 47 seats out of 100. The Democrats wanted to win in several states where Republicans held seats that seemed vulnerable. Democrats needed 3 to get to 50 Senate seats, exactly half, or a net gain of 4 seats to have 51, but they appear to have fallen short. Emily, what do you make of that?
While it looks likely that Democrats will keep the House, it does not at present look like they're going to retake the Senate, although it is possible that both Senate seats in Georgia will go to a runoff election in January. So if you have enjoyed watching Georgia nervously this week, I have great news for you. Yeah, I think to me personally, this was more surprising than how close the presidential election was, right? I think that we had good reason to expect the presidential election to be very close for all the reasons that we've described already. But Republican senators who were expected by everyone to lose their seats, Susan Collins in Maine and Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Sarah Gideon has already conceded to Susan Collins in Maine. You know, it's possible that that Democratic challenger Cal Cottingham will still pull through North Carolina, but it seems likely, as I'm saying this, that Tom Tillis will return to the U.S. Senate. So I think in down ballot races, the Democratic Party will have some soul searching to do. You know, is it failing to connect with, for example, rural voters? Well, why is that? Did the decision to limit door knocking because we're in a pandemic, how much did that hurt Democrats? You know, there were reports that despite the kind of top of the tickets instructions not to do door knocking, that Ilhan Omar in Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib in Michigan, for example, continued to go door by door and get out the vote. And after the dust settles and everyone takes stock, will people say, oh, yes, that was really important. That ended up helping us in Minnesota and Michigan. Is that what hurt us in Texas, where, for example, Democrats were very optimistic that this would be the time that they would start, you know, if not turning Texas blue, then turning it more blue than it currently is. And they were not able to do that. So even if Joe Biden does end up in the White House, the Democratic Party did not perform as well as they had hoped and as many had expected them to in down ballot races.
So as we discussed, the Democrats had hoped to capture a majority in the U.S. Senate, but they appear to have fallen short. The Republicans appear very likely to hold the control of the Senate. And many political pundits say that means the Republicans will be able to restrict what a President Joe Biden will be able to do. Some of his more progressive or liberal ideas, whether that's on the environment or rolling back the so-called Trump tax cut from the year 2017 and increasing the taxes on American corporations. Maybe Joe Biden would not be able to do that, even if he's president, because the Senate would be held by pro-business Republicans. As for the House of Representatives, the Democrats, it appears, will hold their majority, but they actually lost a few seats. So there certainly is not a so-called blue wave. Blue is the color of the Democratic Party here. Not a blue wave, Josh. So indeed, there are lessons to be learned. Republicanism and Trumpism were not soundly rejected.
No, and the congressional results for the House of Representatives are pretty disappointing if you're a Democrat. There will be questions asked of their leader, Nancy Pelosi, who's currently the Speaker of the House, as to why they seem to struggle. They seem to have done quite badly among Hispanic voters in America, particularly. And the Senate results are disappointing, too. I think Joe Biden didn't have a lot of what they call coattails, which in American politics means he didn't bring a lot of down-ballot candidates with him. People voted for Joe Biden primarily because they wanted to see the end of the Trump presidency. But he wasn't a candidate who greatly excited the base or created a real sense of a movement behind him. And so he doesn't seem to have helped particularly other candidates in the Democratic Party do well. And it's the first time that a Democrat is taking the control of the presidency, if he wins, to not have the Senate for, I think, since 1988. So it's going to be a pretty tough time for him. All his transformative ideas are basically out the window if he becomes president, because Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate leader, will be very, very tough. We know he's a very tough operator, and he won't really let him do much at all that isn't pretty moderate. So both from his cabinet appointees to his legislative plans to his judicial appointees, everything will have to be neutral, not neutral, but everything will have to be moderate and done with the cooperation of the Republicans. So there is a little bit of glumness in some Democratic circles that even if they win the presidency, they're not going to be able to enact the kind of transformative agenda that they think the country needs.
You're describing, Josh, political friction likely between Joe Biden, if he becomes president, and Mitch McConnell, the senator from Kentucky who has been reelected, and he is the Senate majority leader. The business community actually likes that. We saw Wall Street enjoy the notion that there could be a Democrat in the White House, and Democrats often spend a lot of money on building infrastructure and maybe more stimulus to help the American economy in light of coronavirus. So Wall Street liked that. Okay, a Democrat, Joe Biden winning, as long as he's held back on the more progressive ideas, and it looked like the Republicans holding the Senate would hold him back. You know, it makes me think about, by the way, the Electoral College, the fact that we have 51 separate elections in the states and in Washington, D.C. Emily, as of now, what do you think about the effectiveness of that? There are so many people who say, hey, Joe Biden got more votes than Donald Trump. 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton got more votes than Donald Trump. And yet it's the Electoral College, a complicated system where every state has its own rules as to how to count votes and how to choose electors. Is that effective, or it's just something we have to live with?
Well, it looks for now like it's something we are going to live with, whether or not we should, because while Democrats have been clamoring, or some Democrats, I should say, have been clamoring to get rid of the Electoral College, it is highly unlikely that if Republicans keep the Senate, Democrats just aren't going to be able to do that. And out of the eight last elections, Democrats have won the popular vote seven times. But, you know, I was describing this to someone. That's like reading a storybook and looking at what the weather is and then using that to decide how you're going to dress when you get outside. Right. Like, it just doesn't matter. And yes, Joe Biden got the most votes of anyone and exceeded Obama. But that's not what matters. And I think that, you know, if there are certainly people in this country who would like to see it abolished, but I just don't think that that's going to happen in the near future. Does it seem like it's from a different time? Yes, it was designed by people who were born in the 1700s. Is it meant to reflect the plurality and diversity and the enfranchisement that we have in this country today? Again, no, because it comes from a time of white landowning men, but it is the system that we have. And I think, you know, it is important to remember that every election that Democrats and Republicans go into, you know, you go into it playing by the rules of the game that you have agreed to ahead of time. Because we still have the Electoral College, Democrats went into this knowing that they had to win the most electoral votes, just as Republicans did. Does that block a lot of what progressives would like to see Biden do? Yes, I think it's not just the Electoral College, obviously, but the system that we have, like the Senate and the Electoral College. And, you know, Republican senators have a majority now, even though they represent something like 14 or 15 million fewer people than Democrats do in the Senate. But again, that's the system as it is currently designed. And with a split government, that's the system that we're likely to have for the next two or four or and so on and so forth years.
Yes, there would have to be a change to the Constitution of the United States. It's not easy to amend the Constitution. You need super majorities, not just in Congress, but then in the state legislatures across the country. So we shouldn't expect the complicated Electoral College system to change. And Josh Glancy, even though many people around the world are surprised and a little bit confused by the American system, you know, if you think about even the parliamentary system in your home country, the United Kingdom, who becomes prime minister? Someone who is the result of all the separate parliamentary constituencies around the country. Again, it's not a direct election for prime minister. So would you agree, Josh, that the world ought to understand America has its system?
Yes. I mean, the American system clearly isn't perfect. Otherwise, we'd be sitting here with a president at this point. It is less democratic, obviously, to have an electoral college, and it's not what they call majoritarian. But it is what it is. And Emily points out that you go into the election knowing that, and you choose a candidate based on wanting to appeal to certain states and to win an electoral college victory, and you run a campaign accordingly. And that does mean people in certain states perhaps don't have their priorities heard and aren't as enfranchised as they might be and as empowered as they might be by the electoral process. That's a problem. And I think you could make an argument for change. But as you point out, Dan, that change requires an enormous majority and is unlikely to happen. So rather than necessarily complaining about that system, people need to just work on winning within the parameters of the system they already have.
I just know that in the coming weeks here on Issues in the News, we'll talk about foreign policy and how America reacts with countries all around the world, with organizations like the United Nations, the NATO alliance, of course, the other major powers like Russia and China, the Middle East. All of that may change if Joe Biden is president rather than Donald Trump. Very big subject to think about, and I know that's in part why the world is watching what happens here as the votes have been counted even after Tuesday's election day. That's all the time we have for this edition of Issues in the News. Thanks to our panelists, Emily Tamkin, U.S. editor for The New Statesman, and to Josh Glancy, Washington bureau chief for the British newspaper, The Sunday Times. This program is produced here in Washington, D.C. I'm Dan Ravine.